If you are contributing to an open source project these days, chances are that it's hosted on GitHub. On the one hand, that's kind of cool because everybody knows GitHub, everybody has an account there. On the other hand, it is a centralized system. It's owned by Microsoft these days. Not everybody likes it. And so I'm very excited to introduce Notus to you, who's going to be telling more about the downsides of GitHub and what we can do about it and use potential alternatives. So enjoy.
Okay, so I literally just forgot that I had like a microphone here and I tried to grab the microphone. Anyways, hi, I'm Notus. So this is my first presentation. I have no idea whether I have like enough time for everything, but you know, I'm just gonna try to get like as far as possible and then see what's gonna like come out of it. So I'm Notus online, or some other people know me as Ivory. My real name's Panagiotis Vasilopoulos, but you don't even have to try, it's fine. I'm a student in Aachen, Germany, and I'm currently involved with Goldberg. Disclaimer, I'm not being paid for this. And I basically do like a little bit of everything. I like privacy, decentralization, open source, that kind of stuff, and yeah. I didn't want to do this talk in German, even though I can speak German, because I didn't want to like bother with like articles. Like I don't want to like think about, is it there already? So first of all, I want to thank like these the following people and some additional people. But like I made this folio, I made this slide like 2 minutes before the presentation. Basically, those people helped me with like proofreading and you know basically gave me some directions and some you know knowledge that I had to basically build into my presentation later. Like one of them basically told me something like 2 years ago that I added the presentation was like very helpful. So thank all of you and thank you Goldberg and everybody else that has ever reviewed my trust pull requests. So we're going to start with some historical background. So I know that every single one of you has basically come here because, like, you know, GitHub, it's bad or anything, but I think that it's like, I'm going to go on like a large explanation as to how we basically came here and how we basically came to use GitHub for open source and what came before that and how is the past related to the present. And that's what I explained in the next slide, like the structure. Oh, wait, no, that wasn't what I explained. Whatever. I'm blowing the microphone, is it fine? Yeah, whatever. So the year was 1999. That was like the year of the Euro, the year when the Nintendo 64 released, the year before like the dot-com bubble burst. I also wasn't born yet, so that's like a disclaimer because like I literally wasn't born. I may make some mistakes, but I didn't live through that. I read like lots of mailing lists or something. And most importantly, possibly the most important event of this year, or the most important event that possibly ever happened ever, is a company called VA Linux that just made a website called SourceForge, which was like a place where some optimistic people could just like put their code out there and share it with people. So I'm going to explain some details about VA Linux, who used SourceForge, and what was like different, what was revolutionary about it, and the management shakeups that ultimately contributed to its downfall. And yeah, thanks Linus and Fountful for basically proofreading this. So VA Linux, it was a company basically, you know, it was in Fairfax, Virginia. They previously sold like Linux computers like 20 years before Lenovo and Dell started doing that. And eventually that didn't start like going so well. And they were like, oh, hey, open source. Maybe we could make like a platform where, you know, people could just go there then make open source. And, you know, it was like a first huge home for like open source projects and possibly like one of the first like authoritative websites. It was not only used as a platform, but it was also an interface for people to just like, I don't know, basically present their software and have people like download that. It was like an interface because otherwise it wouldn't like be discoverable. And, you know, because you like had to make money later, they had to introduce ads. Did I drop something? No, it's fine. So basically many projects that you may or may not have heard of used SourceForge, like GIMP, FileZilla, ReactOS, Audacity, Nmap, OpenOffice, and many, many more. Like the list goes on, and some even still use it today, actually. I found out that yesterday. And, you know, I used the source here. It was like a blog post from 2001. And the thing that was like so revolutionary about SourceForge is that it like combined everything into once. You didn't just put your code up there. It also provided you the tools that you would otherwise have to host yourself, which was not really practical if you just like wanted to just work on the code and then like be done with it. So it's just like issue trackers, mailing lists, like you could basically also like interact with your audience and, you know, have some sort of a way to like incorporate feedback. So, you know, that's basically also the case with GitHub today. It just like has like everything in beautiful only one package. So that was like what basically started it in a sense. You didn't, and so you like focus on the code. But the problem is that, you know, eventually they have to like make profit. They had to make money. So they eventually like literally quadrupled their profit over like, you know, the mid-2000s by adding like Google Ads and download pages. And they managed to basically, you know, make like money off of open source. Like they were the first to do that. And did that go well? Oh yeah, sorry. In 2001 though, they turned the platform closed source. SourceForge at first was free software. And that was, for a public company, basically somewhat unheard of. Because SourceForge was, could have been what you could like consider as like intellectual property, but eventually they walked back from that. They had a few difficulties, and then they sold their company to like, and then SourceForge got sold to Dice.com. They were also known for like Slashdot, which was their Reddit before Reddit. And they tried to put even more ads, turn this into like, you know, some ad laden mess. And in 2016, they sold to another company called BizX in San Diego. And yeah, like the Slashdot thing was known, so they renamed themselves to Slashdot Media, which was kind of confusing. And, you know, I think that, like, one of the things that people thought when they were using, like, such a huge website with such a huge user base, with so much, like, authority, it's like, you know, it's a massive company, so my projects are, like, totally safe forever, right? I'm going to get back to this point later, but I think that this is, like, particularly important to keep in mind. In the meantime, Linux happened. Or Git happened. I forgot the name. Yeah, whatever. It's fine. So, you know, open source projects use these things called version control systems. I'm going to explain that in a bit. And for that, I'm going to explain that in a bit as well. Linux used a proprietary tool called BitKeeper. There were, like, other alternatives at the time. I'm going to get into, like, what a VCS is. Like, in just a minute, that's the next slide. Sorry about that. Like, CVS, there were other things that you could use instead of BitKeeper. But Linus Torvalds thought that everything was basically trash. Even Subversion, which was like the CVS continuation that was supposed to fix the problems. Apparently that wasn't good enough for Linus. Two buffers of version developers. And what's a version control system? So imagine you're a developer. We'll call this guy A. You have a laptop, you work on your project, and then you make a project consisting of a text file called hello.txt. And the hello.txt file just consists of a, you know, a text called hello, exclamation mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark. And then a second developer wants to join in. And they go like, hey, I want help. So they add a new thing to the file saying, hello, mom, exclamation mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark. And then how do you get that developer A? In some cases, it wasn't really possible to, like, you know, send it over CD or DVD. It was like a bit of, you know, kind of, it was like kind of counterproductive, you know, just uploading all of these files, because this is just a simple text file. But if we think of Linux, then it was like, you know, megabytes and hundreds of megabytes of data. So, you know, just uploading the same stuff was a bit redundant. You had to come up with a way to prevent that. So developer B pushes the word mom to what we call the cloud these days, like what the kids call the cloud these days, or what normal people call a repository. And then with the power of the internet, the developer A can pull those changes back to their computer. But here's the thing about mom. So mom doesn't consist of the word mom. It also consists of some other data, like, you know, what has changed and where it has changed, like hello.txt is aware, who made that change, when that change happened, and for what reason. We write the reasons with those things called commit messages. Some of you might know this already, but because like everybody knows Git now, but this thing, this wasn't like a given, like always. If you've used CVS before, you know what I mean. Or something else, I don't know. BitKeeper requires to store some of this information, like some of this metadata, on BitKeeper's server. And that was a problem, because like if, you know, they want to get away from BitKeeper for any reason, they'd be like stuck there. And they could also not have like a comprehensive history of the project that where you could track, you know, who made what saints, when, and the why, which is something that is actually given these days. So the solution for that was SourcePooler. SourcePooler was an open source re-implementation, you know the story, made by a guy called Andrew. He worked in the same company as Linus Torvalds, but they worked on separate projects because Linus was working on Linux. And SourcePooler was like a tool that connected to Beekeeper servers and could interact with them and could take backups of the history. This was especially useful because there were like some free software, you know, absolutists that did not want to agree to Beekeeper's terms in order to be able to contribute to Linux and view what happened. And that, understandably, annoyed the living hell out of Beekeeper. So Beekeeper eventually kind of broke it off with Linux. So Linus basically made Git, Linus and friends, of course. It was like one of the first times where he completely stopped working for more than a week on the kernel. And the difference about Git was that when you downloaded a copy of a source code, you had all this information, like the when, the what, whatever. And then when you downloaded that repository, you could also, when you didn't just download the code, you could also download every single thing, like when, what, why, etc. And then just, you know, have like a comprehensive copy of the history's projects in a project, in a sense. And that was kind of revolutionary, in a sense. In April 2005, Linus merged the first commit in Linux using Git. In 2008, GitHub was founded. By the way, did you know that GitHub is now owned by Microsoft right now? In 2009, SourceForge, because they had to catch up with the competition, of course, started supporting Git. Previously, they only supported another thing called Mercurial or Git, or no, CVS. So who won in the end? So Beekeeper eventually became like obsolete. I don't think I have to answer this question because, like, how many of you have heard of Beekeeper before, like, this talk? Like, can you raise your hands? Okay, that's a minority. And how many of you have heard of, like, Git in the room? All right, so that's, like, basically everyone here. So I think that it's pretty clear, like, who won. And they eventually started posting their things, like, their source code on GitHub. Which is, like, in 2017, they were, like, saying that, you know, we're still doing the development of Beekeeper on Git, on like Beekeeper, but then in 2019 they called quits. The last one was 2 years ago. This is the master copy of like Beekeeper. Oh wait, yeah. And in the meantime, SourceForge happened again in the year of 2013. After the acquisition, they tried to make more money, and they tried to give those open source developers a piece of the cake. They made a program called DevSare, not a computer program, like a monetization program. And it was supposed to be like this transparent. They basically bundled, you know, other software into the installer. And they were like, you know, this is going to be transparent. We're going to have like consent of developers. It's going to go completely right. Google loves us. We are fully compliant with Google's strictest policies. It did not go well. Then Google Chrome started marking their downloads as literally viruses. That was a small spoiler, but I had to say that as soon as possible. And they said that we will never ban all offers without consent. So if you want to make money, you could. But if you do not want to ban all ads, then, you know, you do not have to. And that's how, when you basically want to download FileZilla, or the Windows installer of my FileZilla, you would get like an ad there, and everybody started complaining. Oh, I accidentally kicked this thing. Yeah, I can't see with this mask very well, as you can imagine. You would get virus warnings. Why does FileZilla have viruses? I thought it was the perfect thing. And then, you know, you had like people on the GIMP mailing list saying, GIMP is being used as a lure for malware, be careful. Or, my girlfriend got a virus. Please fix this. This is ruining your project reputation. Just my 2 cents, guys. But here's the thing about GIMP. Okay, in with FileZilla wanted the ads. They wanted to make money. They wanted that piece of the cake. But GIMP never actually participated in that program. GIMP left SourceForge at some point because they didn't only have the DevSer program at the time. They also had like some massive download pages where there was like a small download button and then like lots of like huge advertisements saying download, which reasonably confused some people. And then they left it because that was like not a very good reputational thing. And then SourceForge decided to go like, okay, so they left us, so we might as well just host a redundant mirror. Let's make SourceForge a place where people can download GIMP from. And then they basically put a lot of ads on it. Because, you know, we don't have to talk to them anymore, so we can put ads, right? The source there is not very visible. That's fine. The source is like somewhere in the GIMP mailing list. It's fine. And they thought that the like SourceForge was abusing their trust that they gave them at some point. and that they can fix this, even if like they get rid of the bait, even if they make it impossible for somebody else to impersonate GIMP on SourceForge, like SourceForge, for example. And that because like every management change could basically like undo this promise. They do not like SourceForge anymore, and that caused like a massive exodus. There were other similar controversies, and then basically everyone moved to like other alternatives. I didn't mention all of them, I don't know all of them, like Google Code, Coldplex, GitHub. By the way, does it say that they are owned by Microsoft right now? I think I forgot about that. And, you know, Google Code, people went to Google probably because it was like a massive company, everybody knew about that, and they felt like, it's a massive company. So my projects are totally safe there forever, right? I can still keep developing there, just focus on the code, right? Some of you might know the answer. The answer was like fairly clearly no, because they basically killed that thing, like every other Google product like ever. Well, at least I covered one alternative, because the title of the talk is like, please make your own GitHub alternatives, but you're not Google, so it doesn't matter. So it's probably still alternatives, but it's fine. So the takeaways from this entire ordeal, this took me like 20 minutes, but explaining this context and how it relates to the present was actually very important. It was like everything is temporary, like SourceForge was fine at first, and then they shitified themselves to death. And your project's trust, like, you know, you develop GIMP for free, but when you go to a platform like SourceForge, you're giving them credibility. So your project's trust in a platform lend that said platform credibility and power. Or power concentration, which means that they can just do get away with whatever they want. Well, not really, because I think that SourceForge pushed it like a bit way too far. But that's basically the point of internet services. Like, you know, you try to make profit, but you don't try to annoy your users that are already on your platform too much so that they move away. SourceForge failed at that. And insert business here, heartbreak, open source, not loves, not heart. Sometimes people that don't actually get open source and then they try to make as much money as possible, you know, oh, I'm still alive. Great. I didn't finish that. You know, I'm just gonna skip that, it's fine. And you know, the infrastructure you don't control, if you don't control the infrastructure, and you know, some product owner, I say you know way too often, it's fine. They might as well may take some decisions on that are not in like your best interest. These interests can completely bleep you over. And you know, if you are a volunteer, you will be the one cleaning up the mess. You won't be paid for that. So even if you want to own some platform because you just wanted to focus on the code, damn it, you might in 2 to 3 years, I don't know, you might have to like clean up some messes. And then yeah, the last lesson is like, don't mess with Linus Torvalds, he's going to kill your company. I'm still waiting for NVIDIA. Joking. Oh, big platforms are like convenient. You go on Spotify, there's music on there, there's a lot of music on there. It's everything is accessible. And then when you have to basically go on Spotify, for example, I'm using Spotify as a namesake, this could also apply for every other big platform basically, they aren't convenient anymore. If you want to move away from Spotify and then go to Deezer, you can't export your playlist. Matter of fact, it's a violation of their OILA. This is also the case about platforms that host like code, even if it sounds like completely insane, because it's like such a niche. Now, let's go back to GitHub, but first, again, SourceForge. Even though maybe I should have named the title of this talk a bit differently, it's fine. So, SourceForge, you know, they started existing in 1999, and then in 2013, they started, you know, going completely downhill. Like, they were already going downhill, but then they were, like, crashing like a meteor, and then exploded. Open source projects trusted them, and that just suddenly happened. It was like they got sold. Nobody ever saw that coming, or did they? Well, one of the people that kind of saw that coming was like some free software nerd called Loic Tahri. He released like a blog post called "SourceForge is Drifting." Shared that with the Free Software Foundation of Europe, and I took some 4 quotes that are like somewhat applicant to they can be applied to the president, I think. So before SourceForge, the thing that was like so revolutionary about it was like you could like have like one platform and do everything. Somebody else would take care of everything for you for free, and that was good because you had like a budget of zero when we're talking about open source. you don't have to host everything by yourself. You don't have to force everybody to make a different account. You just host, you just use four source forwards, and this would like completely work out. And they moved to non-free software because, again, SourceForge was at first free software, but then they kind of like walked back from that. It was the culmination of a series of steps designed to lock users in. And they also had some capabilities of allowing you to take your projects away from SourceForge, but then they completely killed them after making that switch. Maybe, I'm not sure, like, does anybody think that this is in any way relevant to what's happening now? Anyways, in a completely unrelated subject, let's talk about GitHub. Oh, wait, no, sorry, I forgot about this thing. Yeah. Okay, so that was like the next thing, but now I'm going to talk about this thing. Well, it's fine. It's my first presentation. I'm allowed to make mistakes. So they said that, you know, when they switched to proprietary software, they could like build extensions that might make it harder for projects to move in, or make it too much trouble, or make it too annoying. You do not want to do that because you just wanted to work on the code, damn it. You don't want to basically bother with all of that stress. And that was the power. He said in the year 2001 that there shouldn't be like a company controlling all of this stuff from top to bottom. It has to be like collaborative and all of that stuff. Anyways, in a completely unrelated subject, not the line doesn't even work because I already spoiled it, is GitHub. It's completely unrelated, like nothing to do with anything. But first, does anybody have like any questions? Like, is everybody like, has everybody understood where I'm going with this so far? Okay, then I'm going to carry on. So GitHub is like safe. It has a massive user base. Everyone is on GitHub. I am on GitHub. Are you on GitHub? Okay, you're on GitHub. Are you on GitHub? See, like I have a sample size of three. It's kind of selected, but that's fine. It's luxury free, as in beer. And yeah, I keep forgetting. I spoiled this already. And it's like the largest platform for like hosting open source projects. GitHub is like convenient. They give you like everything. They are popular. Everyone is on GitHub. Everybody can find my projects. Everyone can see them. I can become famous. I can make lots of money. I don't know. No, that's not the case. It's reliable. I know that Microsoft will be able to keep a service online around the clock. Some of you are laughing. You've probably used Microsoft Teams before. I know that it's dependable. I know that it's just like not some weird thing hosted in somebody's weird ass basement. I know it's just not going to disappear into like thin air tomorrow and all of my code, all of my history is going to go away. I can rely on GitHub, right? And it's presentable. So if like, you know, one of these recruiters that spend like 6 seconds in total looking at your CV, see GitHub, they might as well like, they recognize that effort. And I have to admit that, like, that's kind of a problem for me when I basically want to advocate like for free software for this, because they say GitHub and then they say, oh, open source, that's interesting. It's kind of like a recognized thing because everybody knows what GitHub is. In short, it's popular, reliable, dependable, and presentable. This is why I walk back there when I have to like switch a slide instantly. Whatever, it's fine. So the GitHub model is that you have like issues where a user can go to the maintainer, report bugs, report problems, report everything. You have pull requests where if you want to like make a change, you can collaborate with like the developer of a project, then get it merged. Yeah, this is loud stage. I should probably walk around less. That's fine. There are discussions now, so instead of going on Stack Overflow, you can just go on github.com and ask every question to the developer that's doing this thing for some reason for free. And you have like an entire GitHub ecosystem, extensions for developers, CI, where you can make new releases, dependable that updates your libraries. You have basically everything that you need in an all-in-one package. It sounds slightly familiar to me. All of these things that I just mentioned, they are not a part of Git. Git was made because there was some sort of a vendor lock-in situation right there. There was a company holding the keys. You had the code, but there was like the company that had some more information. And so, so in order for you to basically stay on that platform, they had to maintain that information in order to retain that sort of power. Git was a solution that started existing in a way, in a shape or form that wasn't really, that was basically extremely Linux specific in a sense. It lets you download the whens, the whats, and the whys, but you didn't have like issues. You didn't have like centralized platforms, for example, for reporting issues. Or, well, not exactly, because you could like just use email. This mask is really counterproductive. Sorry for noise. I said earlier that building proprietary extensions building proprietary extensions to this stuff basically makes users hooked on to the set platform. I also brought up earlier that I forgot what I wrote there. It's also had to work with the mask. You know, can I just like completely kill the mask? Like, can I just do like a face reveal? Okay, so I'm going to like do a face reveal in a few seconds. Be prepared for it, guys. Okay, can I do the face reveal? Okay, I can barely see your hand. It's way too blurry, but I'm... Oh! Hi, that's me. Oh, the camera is dead for some reason. That's very unfortunate. I don't know how that happened. I think that's like something completely weird that just like happened right there. What a coincidence. I'm going to say one example of like a project that's like locked in. Do I sound right, by the way? I probably sound right. The project's called Gitsy. It's a GitHub alternative that's hosted on GitHub. It was based on some other thing called Gogs, but the Gogs developer basically went missing for like a few months. So the open source developers did what they had to do. They forked it. And they also have tools for like migrating issues and pull requests away from GitHub. I hope I didn't mess with the audio too much. I hope that's fine. But the problem is that these migration tools, they rely on web requests. You make like, you request like an issue, you request like a pull request, you request in every single reaction, and then you get like rate limited to hell. But thankfully, GitHub has a migrations API that allows you to take the issues, and that allows you to take your repositories, and then host them with your own GitHub Enterprise TM server. But unfortunately, that migrations API also gets rate limited. Oh wait, I spoiled this next slide already. Whatever, it's fine, it's my first talk, I can make mistakes. And you know, nay also gets rate limited. Please act like you're surprised. It's been still in effect after 6 years, so even if like Gitsy started using GitHub and thought, hey, we can just like create tools for migrating later, now they're basically stuck on GitHub, and now it's basically like a chef not eating their own soup. They refuse to eat the soup that it just made for you. And it looks kind of weird, and this soup may not be made well made because they might not very well know what their soup tastes like. So even if you get that archive, it's only a starter format. It's only for GitHub Enterprise Server. And by the way, did I tell you all guys that GitHub is all open source so you can see how that works? No? I think I did. I don't know. I have like short memory or something. By the way, GitHub is all open source. And open PRs cannot be migrated easily because PRs are made using a thing called forks, which is a modified version of a repository of some source code, like I make a project, and then a guy takes my code and makes their own modified version. And then if I go to another platform, you know, all of these users that have also made modified versions of my own repository, they all go there. So that can really disrupt the development of a project if you decide to go away from GitHub. Is there a solution? The answer is no. Or, well, somewhat. There is a work in progress. It's called the friendly forks format. It's supposed to be like eventually this big open standard thing. By the way, one of the people that's like working on this thing, like 23 years, yeah, it's 2024. Like 23 years later, the guy's still at it. It's like Loic Tachery. Funnily enough, he said that at some point that you don't have like to have somebody else. Maybe he just basically straight up did that. He's been doing this for like longer than I've been alive on this planet, which is like it's kind of saying something about like the motivation. And they even have like a working proof of concept, like you can like convert repositories that you host on a GitHub instance to like repository that you host on like a Forgeo instance, which is like a GitHub alternative. I'm all going to tell you all about it later. It's totally not going to be an advertisement source or something. And I'm also going to mention Fossil that has like taken like a slightly different approach. The friendly forks format, it's like you take a GitHub repository and then all of these extensions, like the issues, the pull requests, you can basically put them in like one package. In essence, it's like some sort of like a storage standard. Sorry, I need the water. Like, I was like very thirsty. It's going to be like relevant for Federation, so I'm just going to skip that. Like, no. Yeah, whatever. First talk. I'm going to talk about the popularity of GitHub. Everyone is on there. Or are they? I'm going to have to switch the slide, so I got to have like a transition or something. So money in open source. How do you make money in open source? So GitHub essentially offers people the creativity of other people.
In history, if you want to make money off of art, you could do like two things. You could like be an artist or find an artist by painting off of them, and then sell the painting. Or you got all of these paintings through, I don't know, like you bought them, colonialism, whatever, and then you just let everyone like pay €5 and you could access them in a museum. As far as I'm aware, GitHub doesn't sell paintings or own a museum. They profit from your open source software. Sorry, I said that way too fast. They profit from your free and open source software. How? Despite not being open source. I hope I've said it before. Did I? I don't know. I forget easily. So I'm going to show you guys a tutorial. How to make money from open source. Free download, no scam, 100% not free. Oh, fuck. So apart from making a product that's like great, and I gotta say, GitHub is like a great product. You also have to market the product in a way that maximizes profit. As long as you don't do it the same way as SourceForge did, you have to like be a bit more restrained with like the things that you want to do. Because open source is essentially free advertisement, and if you get people to know about your product, you might as well get like more open source, so they're gonna get more free advertisement. And you have like this positive GitHub loop. So everybody knows about your software, it's battle-tested, it's been tested against literally millions of developers, you don't have to train your employees, and when we say we use GitHub internally, you know how to use this already, you might as well make yourself like an attractive employer. I hope that this state is not going to collapse by the way that I step around like so often that I walk, whatever. But the thing about hosting a project on GitHub is that you give GitHub credibility and power. They get like some crazy SEO stuff out of it. Like you go, like if somebody looks up your project, then they see github.com, and then oh, and no, github.com, and then you have basically this situation where that credibility is worth a lot of money. Microsoft's GitHub was acquired for $7.5 billion in stock, and 90% of the Fortune 500, according to github.com, stats about. No, that was actually for yesterday. I think that it basically grew this, whatever. It doesn't matter. I think they make like billions or like $1 billion in profits per year because they sell their software to so many companies per user. And you have like this feedback loop where everyone is on GitHub because GitHub is big. And GitHub is big because everyone is on GitHub. And it's a massive company, so my projects are totally safe there forever, right? Did I say that before? This feels like a deja vu. Whatever. So let's talk about some. I'm going to talk about something that none of you want to hear. Marketing. So everyone is on there, or are they? Whatever. In January 2003, the CEO of GitHub, Mr. Domke, he said that 100 million developers are using GitHub, and then he kind of tried to explain that. He said that like these developers go on GitHub to build, maintain and contribute to open source projects. And people don't just like contribute code, they contribute documentation, they do like all of this stuff, they do scientific research, they do whatever, and that's like true. But here's the thing, Thomas, I don't agree with you. It's true that that there are like developers that are like spanning across industries and open source contributors that do all sorts of stuff. They translate things, they contribute documentation, they do all of this stuff. I've met this person, I've seen those people before with my own eyes. But the problem is that he said us that there are like 100 million developers that he shows like a user count, and then you have this thing when, and then he describes developers in a very specific way. So the developers that he's talking about, they're like kind of like this. This is like a very scientific set diagram. How many of these developers have like set up a profile, have opened an issue, have made a pull request to like a project that they don't know, or to a famous project like Curl? How many people have made like an account just to open an issue just once? And I think that I accidentally just like this got like slightly cropped. How many people just like use GitHub? More on that later. And how many GitHub users use IPv6 on GitHub? And is it global? Well, kind of. If you're from Crimea, Syria, Iran, okay, not anymore. North Korea, okay, but they censored that anyway, so it doesn't matter. Or Cuba. At some point after the acquisition, GitHub basically clicked on the banning button and then just randomly blocked people from accessing the repositories of these countries in order to comply with like US sanctions. Thankfully, like 2 years later in 2021, GitHub somehow managed to call up President Biden, literally, and then convince them to start operating like Iran again. Advancing developer freedom. And then they said that they're working with the US government to secure licenses in Crimea, whatever, and Syria. Stay tuned. The year's 2024. I still hear TV static. I'm still tuned. But you know, that's like, I don't blame them. Like, this can happen everywhere, not only to GitHub, it can happen to like any platform, no matter if it's like non-profit, for-profit, whatever. And to European authorities as well. But I just hate the marketing. It's like, everyone is on there, but not everybody's on there. It's just mostly Western people that are there. And single points of failure suck, and we might have to like promote decentralization, I guess, because it means like an entire country not being able to work. Because they're like, I spoke with the other country, and I'm talking about the US, I'm not supporting Iran, of course, I'm just talking about, you know, whatever can happen in the next 5 years, you never know. But popular, reliable, dependable, presentable. But I forgot to tell you a few guys something. I am locked in. I am locked into GitHub, I can't get away anymore. Like, here's the thing. I'm just going to talk about like the simplest thing that exists on GitHub. You go on GitHub, there's open source project you use, there's like an Android app, and you want to open an issue. You want to report something to the developer, the person that like made the program, and then say, hey, this doesn't work, please fix this, ! You're gonna have an account for that. So from that 100 million user account, which is extremely convenient for GitHub, by the way, you're essentially forcing people to make an account so that they can report the problem with their baking app. And anonymous alternatives exist. Like, some people have basically tried to experiment with like other approaches. The Tor project has made anon ticket, which you gotta get an ID, and then you get like an anonymous identity, and you can report issues. I'm not going to get into that, but I thought that it was like worth mentioning. Look it up, I guess. But here's the thing, you don't need an account just to make issues. You also need an account to read some issues or some comments, because if you mark a comment as resolved or off topic, you have to sign in to view. So not only can you not export this stuff, not only do you need an account to create issues, you can also not read anything anymore for security or whatever. Like, I don't get it. Like, how is this secure? Like, just make a GitHub account and then see that stuff. I don't know. To recap, these constants are locked in. You gotta export them, no account, no participation. Some can't even participate. There are login walls, vendor lock-in. I hate that. I absolutely hate that with Burning Passion. And by the way, how many people just like browse GitHub as if they do like those TikToks as like kids do these days? So GitHub is basically competing with like TikTok now. They want your eyeballs, they want your monthly active users, they want your eyeballs, they want your minutes per day, they want to waste your time. And I found them once by the way, TikTok, to be honest, but that's just me. GitHub was a social media network. Like, that was before the Microsoft acquisition, but then Microsoft came in and I think they made it kind of worse. Now you can doom scroll Microsoft GitHub. And GitHub now basically caters to lurkers, not content producers. Same way as like YouTube. It used to be about you, but now it's not about you. It's about like optimizing this platform so that people can view as many videos as possible. GitHub is like, but for a person like me, a person that makes software, they are distracting, very distracting. Like, you get like all of these feeds, explore repositories, top repositories, your teams. I haven't even ever seen those repositories. No, I have seen Arch Linux, but I didn't even know they were on GitHub, by the way. But Android Password Store, what the hell is that? Why do I need their latest apps to build? You get like recommendations, trending repositories, a generative speech model for daily dialogue. Why do I care? Tencent AI Lab, popular among people who follow. You just get all of these things right in your own face, as if you have like the attention span of literally a squirrel. For me, like, how many of you just like use GitHub to make software? Raise your hands. Okay. And how many of you just like browse GitHub? Maybe this is like a very wrong selective bias question. Is there like any single one of you that just uses GitHub primarily for the purpose of like browsing it and seeing the repositories and using the feeds without making like, really, you? Damn. There were like many people that just basically complained about that in their community repositories. Like, it was literally kind of a mess when they basically deployed this thing. It was like, guys, please take it down, at least 2,000 upvotes. This is trash, it got completely ignored, but my favorite comment is like this one. Like, you're putting all of these social media features that are useless. What's next, the political news feed? Like, I think that was my favorite comment down there, up there. You get all these number games, the stars, the 46.2K, star 34.5K. I saw an account that's following like 277,000 people. to self-promote. By the way, that wasn't like a number that I came up with. It was literally a number that I read. I have it literally in my notes. You get advertisements, your Copilot, code 55% faster with GitHub Copilot. Please do that. Please buy, give us more money. And you even have like fake GitHub store, black markets. What the hell is this anymore? Like this has come, sorry for the voice crack. I screamed at the robot like a vacuum cleaner. Like most of you were at the event, you saw like somebody calling up a robot and they could like, depending on how much they whistled, you could like go forward or like turn around the robot. Well, I can't whistle, so I had basically screech. That basically, but that was my throat, I think. Yeah, but that's like, GitHub is basically kind of like a shit fight. They tried to get, they were trying to get that activity out of you. And by the way, you can't close pull requests. Like you can't disable pull requests. Like, okay, you're GitHub, it's open source. Why would you have to disable pull requests? Well, if you're like a small indie project that nobody knows about, such as like Linux, for example, you might just want to like host a redundant copy of your code on GitHub so that people that use GitHub can see it. And so if your stuff goes down, you can use it. But the thing is, if you show people there's like another way, other than the GitHub way, it's like not working very well for like GitHub.com. So you have like situations where people just like open a lot of pull requests. Because if you go on like Google and say how to use Git, one of the first five results is going to be like getting started with Git by GitHub.com, where the first paragraph is like a massive advertisement about GitHub, which is, and I quote, the way developers, I don't remember the code. That's fine. Linux only accepts patches per email. Like you send like the chains per email. That's how they work. But people like still open like, not all of them are like serious, but they still open like pull requests. I still find that funny. It's like very funny. I didn't make the jokes, so I can say that's funny. And the reason too is like, you might want to release your code as open source, but you might not want to have like others release it. Like use it. You might not want to have like other people make pull requests because then you lose the copyright, which is extremely convenient if you sell people GitHub.com, the software. So issues can be disabled, PRs can't, and PRs are like issues. They are like, hey, I have this problem with like, they're like still text, but have like an extra field where you gotta like add code. So this feature like makes sense for some projects, but not for GitHub.com. You gotta tell people to use PRs, but they won't read that. Because they think GitHub is the normal thing. So GitHub is a platform for getting work done. Hi. No, it's fine. I still haven't reacted. I just got completely distracted by that. And then I was like, hi. I didn't know what else to say. I didn't want to confront you on the year. Whatever. But you don't make decisions that basically prevent you from getting work done. And there's nobody to talk to. Like, you're at the mercy of some product owner that thinks he's competing with GitHub and then has to go to the quarter meeting just to basically, and then say, hey, more people are using GitHub now. Like, I want to work on the code, damn it. I want to be distracted with all of this stuff about like how my infrastructure works. It's an abstraction layer. I just want it to work. And you know, there's like other things I could talk about, but I've talked like 45 minutes about this, and I need to eventually get into the GitHub alternatives that, you know, most of you people came for if you just read the title. Like there's GitHub Actions, GitHub Pages, and just go and skip that because of time. But this transition was like taking as much time as if I were to actually present these things. Whatever. So in conclusion, history repeats itself. Whoever controls the infrastructure controls your project, essentially. They can affect who contributes. They can basically, with AI algorithms, they can basically get you to like contribute to some other projects more or whatever. I don't know. I don't want to get too tinfoil hat over this. And GitHub has done like great things, but we cannot innovate if we cannot send like patches or pull requests to GitHub. We cannot make improvements. We cannot basically tell them, hey, this is how to make your feed better. You're at the mercy of the product owner. Again, developers first. We need to put developers first, not monthly active users. But we really have like no leverage whatsoever because like we're just some hobbyists with like zero budget. We don't have like many digits in our back accounts. We're not interested in giving many digits in our back accounts. We can't open zero tickets. Caleb. Yeah. So maybe, and now that's a hot take. You should hear somebody that respects you instead. With system administrators or developers that can like to actually talk to. So far, we've like briefly touched on subjects like the Tor's Anon ticket. We've talked about paleolithic things like BitKeeper and SourceForge. Might as well put it up in a museum, I guess. SourceForge is still active, by the way. I've heard, like somebody told me yesterday there's at least one person using it. Complex and Google Code does not exist anymore. RIP. Now I'm going to talk about the alternatives. After spending 45 minutes not talking about the alternatives in a talk that's like about alternatives. That's fine. But it's like, I had to kind of like, the reason why I basically went on a tangent about GitHub is because I had to like give some context as to why there are like people that have been trying to make alternatives to this stuff for like 23 years. It's not just a license issue. It's not about, oh, GitHub's not licensed for GNU CPO version 3 or later. It's also about, you know, just having the control, becoming able to innovate outside of what's imposed to you by one single entity that may not have your best interests at heart, at least not always. And, you know, if you operate outside of the boundaries of what's imposed by you, you can, like, take different approaches. Now, I'm going to present some alternatives, but I don't want to say that these are all the alternatives that exist or that are important. I don't want to say that you should just go ahead and make your own alternatives, because I think that when you make an alternative, you can just basically, I don't know, like, come up with something different, slightly different, just a tiny bit different that somebody else might take and then make everything else better for all of us. So I'm going to talk about Fossil. Oh, I only have 30 minutes. Yeah, that's enough. So before, I mentioned issues and pull requests being like proprietary extensions to Git, which is open source, which is like a distributed version control system, but not distributed anymore because some of that history is basically locked into the platform. Fossil is basically a GitHub in a box substitute. It's not Git. When you load something, yeah, I dropped the polar cap, that's fine. When you clone a repository, you also get the issues, you also get the wikis, you also get basically everything too. They're built into Fossil. So when you basically work on code, you also have like every other unit you could possibly ever need straight into your repository. It's very lightweight. It allows you to import things. By the way, thanks, Emil. Are you here, by the way? Sad. You watch the vote anyways. It's fine. thanks for basically going. Oh, yeah, they already watched it all because they sold them everything, so they don't even have to go here. So it's fine. Yeah, Fossil is like very similar to Git. It uses SQLite in the background for all of these things. By the way, it's used by SQLite to develop SQLite. I kicked the table by accident. I'm clumsy. Whatever. Fair talk. I can make mistakes. It's kind of possible to like have peer-to-peer, but there's like benefits where you have like one single server do everything. For example, you can like have auto-sync mode so that you don't have like this annoying thing where you make a comment, but then you realize you forgot to do git pull and pull the latest changes, and accidentally you've diverged from the main canonical copy of the source code. You can also store like unversioned files. So apart from storing your wikis and versioning everything, you can also like host executables, which is like a very good thing. It looks like this. Like it basically has everything. Like the website is Fossil. All of these things are Fossil. The theme is Fossil. You can it's some good stuff. Like you have to try it out. But it's like if you have to try it out, everybody uses GitHub, so you're not gonna use it, are you? But to be honest, it's like worth checking out. I really don't want to diss Fossil here. It's a great product. And now I'm going to talk about Forzeo. Most of you, or maybe some of you, know that I have something to do for Forzeo. Some person referred to that as like the GitHub talk. No, sorry, the Forzeo talk. Not the GitHub talk. Or wait, this is also GitHub talk. Like the thing I used to advertise Forzeo, but I didn't want to self-promote. I just wanted to diss GitHub for like Microsoft GitHub for like 45 minutes. So the goal of Forzeo is basically taking what GitHub did and then taking it like a step further. It's MIT licensed, which is a bit funny to some, but it's like whatever. It looks like this. This is the feed. Even though I personally don't like the contribution graphs because it's like, you know, contribute. I think it's like something that came from GitHub.com and I think we should eventually replace that. You get like a chronological timeline because, you know, 1,000 years ago, people used to use like chronological feeds for stuff. You get your repositories, and you get like the notifications. It basically shows you what you need and what's happening in order for you to work. Not like what's happening all over the GitHub universe or whatever. That's how the repository looks like. It looks like very GitHub-like. Yeah, Forzeo is Forzeo and Forzeo. I forgot I wrote that title. Whatever. And you know, it's financed by private donations and contracts. Everything's happening transparently in GitHub repositories. It's used by GitHub in other instances. But like Codebreak is not the same thing as Forzeo because Codebreak.org is like a non-profit organization based in like Berlin, and they use Forzeo, and it's like the biggest instance of like Forzeo. And there's like a heavy overlap between people who work on Forzeo and people who work like on Codebreak, including myself. Disclaimer: I'm not being paid for this. And it basically works on working on improve. implicitly works on improving the existing Git workflows. It's super lightweight, which is very useful in the case of like Goldberg. Like, how many of you have used Goldberg before here? Like, okay, so you know how sometimes like Goldberg has downtime or something? Yeah, so you know something, but like it doesn't have downtime always, and I think that because for Ghost4j is like very good, we can actually like, wait, isn't it a few from Goldberg here? No, there were like seven people that, whatever, it's fine. Okay, so there you go, they're not here because I'm about to make like a very bad joke. It's super good that it's like lightweight because what your server looks like this. You kind of need that performance, you know? And you know, they have like some revolutionary features, such as like federation, which is probably going to come within the next century or something. You know, you've heard of the, some people of you may have heard of this like 3 years before, but building like a new kind of thing takes some time. There's like some company called Mesa GmbH, and there's like this guy called Jürger, and he's working on like making federated stars properly, so you can host your own Forzeo and then interact with like another Forzeo and then put a star. Which is a bit unimportant, but you somehow have to start somewhere. You somehow have to tell Forzeo what's activity pub, like the standard we're using in order to do the federation thing, like on social media, and you have to take it further somehow. And yeah, that's how it basically looks like. It looks a bit unconventional, but it like exists. It's not fake, it's not a scam. 100%. And another revolutionary feature is being able to disable pull requests. Sorry, I just want to go over that. And it's written in Go instead of Ruby on Rails. It consumes less electricity and resources than the entire state of Iceland or Ireland or both of them combined. I don't know what I wrote there, but it sucks. And GitHub SSO. So if you're like, hey, we don't use GitHub, but you can just log in with GitHub so that the transition is easy as possible. Just use Forzeo already. Please. Thank you. You also have like easily modifiable templates. So you can basically have Goldberg for Zay, you can basically have the homepage, and you can also have like, you can yeah, the two people that make Goldberg here are like here. Hi, Fanful, hi, LM, hi, Bottle. Sorry, that was a completely random reaction. It's like customizable. And you might be wondering, like I talked about Gitty earlier, and for Zay, it's like a modified version of Gitty. So why am I not talking about Gitty as an alternative? Oh, yeah, I'm going to talk about that in a bit. So some stuff about Goldberg. It's led by a democratically structured nonprofit. This sounds like an advertisement, but please bear on. This is a build-up to a joke, I promise. They host some stuff like GitHub, like an all-in-one package or whatever. So wait, what about Gitty? So some drama happened with Gitty, which was so basically Ghost existed, then the guy that made Ghost disappeared. And then the Gitty basically wanted to make open core, and that annoyed all of the free software, you know, people. So they made a fork, like the open source people always do. And I think it was possibly worse than for humanity than the breakup of the first electronic music duo, Daft Punk. And I also have like a dramatic visualization, not just so what I'm talking about. I have like, yeah, 6 minutes. I spent 15 minutes making this joke. I didn't want to get into the drama, but oh yeah, I'm really playing this, whatever. So yeah, that was like a very sad thing. And yeah, so I'm going to talk about SourceCat. So SourceCat is like a continuation of that email model. It's like very fast, it has like no JavaScript. The Free Software Foundation has rated it with a B, however, instead of an A+, because they refer to free and open source software instead of free software. That's a true story, by the way. They have like some ethical repository criteria, and that's like a criteria to go to A. Like you have to say free software, not free, and not open source. Yeah, I you know what? I feel your frustration, Jeremy. It's a private company by Julian Volt, and somehow he has managed to make it profitable despite everything being like free software. So what SourceForge not do? It's a continuation of the email model. No JavaScript dependencies. It supports Git and Mercurial. They also have like just like Goldberg and GitHub, but they also have like a pages thing. Yeah. By the way, hi, Drew. If you're watching this, sorry that you can't be here this year, but I still owe you some money because you bought the domain from me. You said, like, you're going to pay back someday. There are other alternatives, like Pidgeu, Radical. I didn't promote Radical, but I ran out of time. There's Garrett, for example, which is like, instead of sending an email, you just post something and it looks like it's an email. It's like complicated. I don't want to explain that. It's like, I have 5 minutes. It's used by Go for Android development, but there's like, but the general point is that in order to innovate, essentially, you basically have to go beyond what GitHub, you know, does. And there are some alternatives, but people don't use them, and I think that's bad. I think it basically hurts us, and the thing that doesn't allow us to go further. Like, will GitHub basically ever do something that allows you to work on an open source project that's not GitHub? Oh, that's my alarm, by the way. Yeah, if I were to wake up now, it would be a problem. I only have like 3 minutes. Anyways, with that being said, this was my first talk. It was like slightly chaotic. I don't know. I don't know what you felt, but I guess it's time for a Q&A, I guess. I think I'm done with this. Thank you.
So I think we actually do have time for one or two short questions. So raise your hand if you have a short question.
Oh, please give it to that person. Please give it to that person. I want to say or something.
Why didn't you mention darks?
Oh, actually, I think I had I accidentally deleted the slide. you told me about it, and then I deleted it on accident. I didn't have that slide explaining darks. It's just the thing where it said, you know, darks is also a thing. By the way, you told me that your mother had a personal problem with GitHub, so you told me to basically add Microsoft GitHub as often as possible. Was this amount enough, according to you? All right, thank you. Second question.
Yeah, thank you for your talk. It was wonderful to listen, although the information density was really high. And so, there are tons of stuff that I could ask you if you know that, darks or, you had BitKeeper. But one thing that really bothers me is, GitHub alternatives, sure, I'm totally with you, but what about Git alternatives? I don't like software monoculture, and Git is great, but for
also,
example, what
it's
about
based on Git.
There's SourceHut, but there is not much else. What do you know about that? Are there some nice alternatives like Mercurial Hub?
Well, Fossil, for example, that I mentioned, I think I didn't make it clear. It's not like for Zayo, it's not like GitHub. It's a Git alternative. So it doesn't only have it works similarly to Git, but it doesn't only have Git, it also has issues and pull requests. So that's an alternative. That's something worth looking at. But, you know, as a person that works for Zayo at Kohlberg, I have to be like, yo, I believe that Git is going to be the next big thing, that it's going to stay the next big thing or whatever. But I think that those alternatives are worth looking at and normalizing. I also looked at Bitzo before, but I don't have time to present that. And it's a very cool thing because it even though it's not Git, it allows you, for example, to do things like change your name in retrospect after making a commit, which is kind of important for trans people. And I wish that I had time to get into that. And maybe I should have done that because the title was about GitHub alternatives, and then I just basically ranted for GitHub for 15 minutes. but I just had to get it out of my system, you know, and I could have gone for 3 hours, so or four. Or five, or six. I have a lot of people for GitHub.
We have one more question here.
First of all, great talk. You mentioned GitLab a few times on the side, but you didn't have an explicit slide for GitLab. What is your opinion on GitLab, especially as it is open source-ish and self-hostable?
Okay, so here's the thing. I actually wanted to add the slide that explains why I didn't want to talk about GitLab, because everybody, most of the people that know alternatives already know about GitLab, basically. But, I basically kind of forgot about that. Just explain why I didn't do that. It's not open source, I think. It's open core, so you have to pay for some stuff, and you're not... I should have brought up GitLab, honestly. They also have done some work on Federation, for Zayo. For Zayo and Fossil, I aren't the only people that have done that, by the way. I forgot to explicitly mention that. It was also GitLab. But in the case of GitLab, it was one community member that they don't even want to hire, now that the Dart has basically stalled. Instead of working on stars, they try to make releases. You know how releases, they can also have RSS feeds? They try to basically make it so when a new release comes out, whatever. I'm just talking about self-hostable alternatives, but how many of you have hosted a GitHub alternative here? Sorry, a GitLab instance. And how many of you like doing that? All right, all of these hats have basically come down. So that was basically the reason why I didn't bring it up. I didn't want to pretend it didn't exist, but then I accidentally did that because I just completely forgot about that. So, sorry. First talk on everything, I can make mistakes.